having a theme, especially during Advent. So for the next 4 weeks, since it's a lot of times in Advent, what you will run into is a lot of readings from the prophets. And you'll be getting readings from the prophets, mostly from Isaiah for the next 4 weeks, with some other things thrown in. John the Baptist will make his annual appearance, so the New Testament prophet will be there as well. But what they mostly are talking about in these passages is the promise of one who will come. And by looking at the way they talk about that one who will come, one who they would sometimes call Messiah, who the people would come to recognize as that we are looking for the Messiah. These scriptures, we're going to unpack a bit from each one about what Messiah meant to the people. What were they looking for from the Messiah? And then ultimately, how does that get fulfilled? How does Jesus play that role of the Messiah they were expecting, but in ways that turn out to be sometimes surprising to even those who are looking for Messiah? This morning, the basic idea that you can take home with you is that Messiah would wind up being one who could take the impossible and make it possible. So things that are beyond our reach, things that we think, well, that'd be nice, but can't happen. It turns out that with Messiah, with God's promised one, that impossible stuff becomes something that's within reach and something that can happen. I mentioned in the newsletter, in the little opening column this morning, so if you pick up a newsletter, you'll see a version of this. But I used to be a strong advocate of no Christmas until the day after Thanksgiving. Absolutely. Put my foot down. No Christmas till the day after Thanksgiving. There would be no tree put up until after Thanksgiving, and there would be no playing of Christmas music. That would not happen until after Thanksgiving. I have changed. That used to be me, but that ain't me no more. I will confess that I am so not that anymore that this year I put our tree up the first week of November. I know some of you may be thinking judgmental things now. That's okay. It's okay if you are still a hard line, no Christmas till after Thanksgiving. I'm just not that person anymore. And partially, as my excuse, I knew that Cameron would be home for Thanksgiving, and I knew that of the two children who would be home, he was the one who would like to put ornaments on the tree. Eliza likes to sit on the couch and watch us put ornaments on the tree. She has no interest in actually taking up the physical labor of doing the work, but Cameron likes to do it. So I wanted a tree to be in place, so there was a window of time, and I said, because of that, this being my excuse, I would put the tree up and get the lights on so that I could then enjoy it until Thanksgiving got here. Now, once the tree was up, I figured it's okay then to go ahead and listen to Christmas music as well, because, you know, the tree is there, so why hold back on the Christmas music? So I went ahead and just rushed on and did both. Now, I would tell you that this is not sort of when we're children, we want to do this kind of thing because what we're looking for is to get over the starting line and get moving towards the finish line. And that is not what I'm doing. I am not trying to accelerate Christmas so that it will get here sooner. What I'm trying as a middle-aged person to do is to savor every moment. And one way that I get to savor every moment is by elongating the season. So I got more moments to savor if I begin at the beginning of November. Today, we officially begin our way towards Christmas again. We always take this journey. Every church year begins with Advent and the change of scenery around us that makes us realize something special is happening, something different is going on, something a little festive, lights coming into the darkness. And it changes literally what you're looking at up here. And it feels, it just lifts our spirits a bit. All that is happening. And Advent refers to It's basically a word that means that something is on the way. Something is coming. So within the life of the church, it's the advent of the Son of God, remembering the coming of the Son of God at the first Christmas some 2,000 years ago. But it's more than that. It is also the looking forward to the advent of that same Son of God who will return to us. So it is remembering that which has happened and what has come to us in the past, but also looking ahead to the advent of the one who is to come, our risen Lord. In our culture at large, a lot of times what this season seems to be is the preparation for the advent of one humongous day of gift giving and receiving. That is the thing whose advent we await. And I will be the first to say that we easily can get caught up in the acquisition of stuff and the looking forward to the receiving of stuff, the getting of stuff, and the giving of stuff. But I am not here today to be angry over the commercialization of Christmas. That is a rabbit trail I will not go down today. It's happening, and we have the opportunity to do something different if we would like, but this is not to say that going to be a long screed on the commercialization of Christmas. What I am here to say is that Christmas, or these days that pull us towards Christmas, what is pulling us, I believe, is beyond the gifts and beyond the stuff. I think what Christmas wakes up in people, in every person, because every person is a child of God, every person is created by God, and there's something about this time of year that wakes up in us a desire to get to that place where we can reach out and touch the God who reaches out to touch us. And that desire is within us, and that pull is within us, and that's what we're responding to. So we make lists, and we give and receive gifts as a way of trying to reach out for gifts which actually we may think are beyond reach. So since we can't have peace, and we can't have everybody love each other, and we can't have joy abounding, and we can't have the hope that all those things would bring necessarily all the time, and in fact, often those things are dashed, in place of them, sometimes we'll go racing after those other things, hoping that the things will bring us the joy that we cannot get from the things that are impossible for us. Who wouldn't prefer peace on earth, knowing the present circumstance in the world, in all parts of the world? Who wouldn't want peace on earth? Who wouldn't want hope that tomorrow will be better than today, and then the day after that will be better than tomorrow, and that it would continue on like that day after day, always something better in front of us? Who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want just joy for the world? Absolute, deep, wonderful joy. That I'm talking about a pureness of joy where there's nothing creeping in to cause you to doubt it, but it's just joy. Who wouldn't like to be able to do what Jesus asks us to do? And when Jesus says, love your neighbor, and we say, which ones? And he says, all of them everywhere. Who doesn't want to respond to Jesus and say, yes, I will take on the challenge. I will love everyone. And yet, we know these things, as wonderful as they sound, are gigantic tasks. Tasks beyond our individual ability. Seemingly beyond the ability of any civilization or culture that's ever existed, actually. Because none of that stuff has been realized yet. It's all still something out there that we wish would happen. But Advent always brings the promise of a child who changes everything. And who can make the impossible possible. Advent's a time of prophets, or I mentioned that we will be hearing from Isaiah. And prophets were in the business also at times. Sometimes the prophets were in the business of judgment, But there are times when the prophets do exactly what I was just talking about. They will point towards a future where things that seem to be impossible are in place, where they're happening. And that is what Isaiah is doing this morning in Isaiah, the second chapter. In the days to come, the mountain of the Lord's house will be the highest of the mountains. Many nations will go and say, "Come, let us go to the Lord's mountain, to the house of Jacob's God, so that he may teach us his ways and we may walk in God's paths." What will happen on that day? On that day, God will judge between the nations, settle disputes between mighty nations. Then they will beat their swords into iron plows and their spears into pruning tools. And at that point, nation will not take up sword against nation. They will no longer learn how to make war. Peace will happen. Nothing more, nothing less. Now, you have to understand that these words are spoken to a people who know to their core the absence of peace. They live with it all the time. They are the victims of the wrong side of war and have been a long time when Isaiah is making these prophecies. They hear words about peace and all they know is being dominated and destroyed and having their country destroyed and being taken into exile. What they know as a result of that is pain, and they know suffering, and they know a loss that goes on and on and on. What they absolutely don't know is peace. And what would be incredibly hard for them to believe is that there could ever be a peace that you could depend on and would last and you would never have to worry over. To them, I would suggest that as Isaiah is talking about this peaceful future, there's a wistfulness inside them, there's a yearning for it, but there's a massive amount of distrust and doubt that it could ever actually happen. But there is this wonderful invitation that concludes that passage where Isaiah says, "Come, let's walk by the Lord's light." Come, let's walk by the Lord's light. It's to say, this place where the Lord has cast the light, step into it. And don't be concerned about what's outside of it, but walk in the Lord's light. Psalm 122. Is a song of praise. As I was talking about, it's a psalm of ascent, the part of the people's hymn book, and has a special purpose. It's sort of like in our hymn book, there's a group of them called opening hymns. It's kind of an opening hymn. It's a celebratory thing. It's what's pulling them up the hill so they can go up and worship as they go up to the temple. They're going up to worship, and this one is speaking about peace. It says, "I rejoice with those who said to me, 'Let us go up to the Lord's house.'" There is a truth here that the prophet said the people would find in God. And the people learned that they felt closest to that truth. The place where they could actually conceive that the truth of the peace that the prophet was talking about was in worship, was in the temple, was when they were gathered around with all those other folks having that same yearning and that same desire. So there they would go up to the mountaintop, up to the temple to worship God. And at least for that time to imagine that peace could happen, to imagine that the impossible might be possible. Would you like any impossible things from God this Christmas? I'm getting amens from the choir, which is appropriate. Would you like anything impossible from God this Christmas? Would you like peace in the world?
Yes.
I will simplify it and localize it a bit. Would you like peace in your world?
Yes.
Would that be a nice thing? Do you long for more peace, more hope, more joy, and more love? Are there places in your life where peace seems as far off as peace would have seemed to those people living in exile. When I say, do you desire peace in your life, are there places where you are just as likely to say, yes, I desire it, but that is not a possibility. It can't happen. Places where despair is doing battle with hope. I think I have made this, this is a sermon full of confessions. I believe I've made this one before, but I love Hallmark Christmas movies. It's true. And if I, they put those things together so that one ends and another one begins, and if you're not careful, you could just get stuck watching those things. I know I'm not alone on this, or they wouldn't be on 24/7. So I know that there are others like me caught watching these movies. Eliza and I settled in last night to watch Christmas in Rome. I recommend this. Yeah, I recommend it. It's very good. Two people with lives slightly off the tracks, slightly having some difficulties. One, a young woman, a dreamer, loved being a tour guide in Rome, but had just lost her job because she loves it so much she can't do it efficiently. She wants to tell everything about Rome. So we have this dreamer who needs a little something in her life. And the other, the man, he's a workaholic in Rome on business. And he's operating under the idea that material gain is the thing. And it's actually the ultimate value in life. It's his organizing principle for his life. And then they meet each other. It's almost like you could see it coming. They meet each other. And a relationship develops. And it seems like it's so exactly right, but then complications ensue. Who could have predicted this? Yeah. Almost exactly at the 1 hour and 18 minute mark where it always happens.
Sometimes.
But just when things seem lost, just when it seemed like there was no hope, but nothing could pull this thing out of the fire. Surprise! It all comes together, and those crazy kids fall in love, and I think live happily ever after. That's why these movies are so magnetic. That's why these movies are so addictive. You know, things are going to work out somewhere. At least in that little world that you can escape into for 2 hours. At the end of it all, it's going to be wonderful. Everybody's going to be in love and happy, and you can bask in it for just that time. And when you hold that up against what is often the harsh reality of life, how wonderful does it feel? Advent begins, church year. And the first thing we do is, like those people climbing the hill up to the temple, the first thing we do is climb towards God. Climb towards God through this season as we journey to Bethlehem. And each week we build and we light one candle, two, three, four, until eventually Christmas Eve we come to the Christ candle and we will have reached that moment of ascent once again. We begin our climb to reach the moment when God came to us as the one the prophets promised. When God comes to us as the Prince of Peace. We are reminded immediately, the first thing on the first day of the church calendar, that worship is so central to who we are as people of God. Because when we worship, we're reminded of what reality actually is and of what ultimately is of the most important. Worship reminds us that God is serious about doing the impossible, that God is not messing around. And that God is not holding out things that God doesn't intend to do. but that God is serious about changing things we believe to be unchangeable. God is telling us something better than a fairy tale. Fairy tales are great, but God's doing something different than a fairy tale, something that sounds like a fairy tale, but there's a crucial, critical, wonderful difference. The writer Frederick Buechner, beautiful writer, and he describes what I'm talking about this way. He says, "It is a world of magic and mystery, of deep darkness and flickering starlight. It is a world where terrible things happen, and wonderful things too. It is a world where goodness is pitted against evil, love against hate, order against chaos, in a great struggle, where often it is hard to be sure who belongs to which side, because appearances are endlessly deceptive. Yet for all its confusion and wildness, it is a world where the battle goes ultimately to the good, who live happily ever after, and where in the long run, everybody, good and evil alike, becomes known by his true name. That is the fairy tale of the gospel, with, of course, one crucial difference from all other fairy tales, which is the claim made for it, that it is true, that it not only happened once upon a time, but has kept on happening ever since, and is happening still." One of my favorite things to do when we go to Jerusalem is to get up early before everyone else at the hotel we are at, which is about half a mile from the old city. I love to walk down in the morning, about 5:30, 6 a.m., to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the traditional site of the crucifixion and resurrection of Christ. And it's not just the getting there, it is the journey. And it is like time travel to walk from a modern hotel and walk through the streets of Jerusalem and come to the walls of the old city and to reach the Damascus Gate. If you want to see something that just creates wonder in your mind, Google the Damascus Gate when you get time this afternoon. But to see the sort of medieval grandeur of the Damascus Gate, it feels like a fairy tale. It feels like mystical things are going to happen when there's nobody there at 6 in the morning and just a few vendors are beginning to set up possibly, but very few people are out. And you're walking to one of the oldest holy sites in the Christian tradition, and your heart just wants to soar. And it brings to mind this passage from Buechner, where he's talking about the gospel as fairy tale with the one critical difference that this is true. And you're walking around in a true, real life fairy tale from God that actually happened. Pilgrims are drawn there all the time because of the story that begins with a birth. Story that begins with a birth and God coming to us. A story that changes everything. A story that says the impossible actually turns out to be possible. Come, walk in the light of the Lord and let us see what happens. Thanks be to God. Amen.